Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Saturday, news organizations reported that Donald Trump has tapped Rex Tillerson, the oil baron who runs ExxonMobil, to be Secretary of State. Last year, in-depth investigations by Inside Climate News and the LA Times revealed that as early as the 1970s, ExxonMobil knew more about climate change than it had let on and deliberately misled the public about it. It's also well documented that for years, ExxonMobil has spent millions of dollars supporting a network of lobbyists, advocates, and pseudo-experts to attack climate scientists and spread misinformation and lies about climate change. Last week, Donald Trump picked another climate denier and oil industry defender to head the Environmental Protection Agency. Scott Pruitt, the Oklahoma Attorney General, who is suing the EPA on climate change, is fighting the agency he has been nominated to lead. And then there are reports that Representative Kathy McMorris Rodgers, a sixth-term Republican from Washington State, is the likely choice for Secretary of the Interior. Congresswoman Rodgers is also a climate change denier and an ardent opponent of regulations for greenhouse gas emissions. She opposes federal ownership of public lands and has voted to make it more difficult for the president to create national monuments. Last but not least, Politico is reporting that Donald Trump's transition team wants the Energy Department to provide the names of employees who have worked on President Obama's climate initiatives, a request that has current and former staffers fearing an oncoming witch hunt. So as Donald Trump distracts the media by claiming to have an open mind on the environment, he is filling his cabinet with climate deniers who have very close ties to the fossil fuel industry. Or in the case of Rex Tillerson, is the CEO of ExxonMobil. At a time when countries around the globe are trying to come up with policies to mitigate the impacts of climate change, what does it mean for the United States to have an administration that denies the very science of climate change and a media that still treats it as a topic worthy of debate? What does this new era mean for climate scientists and the future of research in the United States? Today we're joined by two guests. Michael Mann is professor of atmospheric science at Penn State and director of the Penn State Earth System Science Center. He's the author of three books, including his most recent, The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. Michael co-authored that book with Tom Tolles, a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for The Washington Post. He writes the Tom Tolles blog and is the artist of six books. And Tom and Michael both join me in studio. Hi, thank you both for coming in. Well, it's great to have you. I should also mention that at noon, you're both going to be speaking at the Commonwealth Club. That's today, 555 Post Street in San Francisco. Tickets are still available. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. Wow, what a day for you both to be in studio. In that intro, I didn't even mention that over the weekend on Fox News, Donald Trump said, quote, "Nobody really knows if climate change is real." Michael Mann, what is it like to be a climate scientist right now?
Well, you know, when you hear something like that, I imagine it's similar to the feelings that some of my fellow geophysicists who are in town right now for the AGU conference, and some of them study other planets, and it would be sort of like them being told, you know, well, there's still a debate about whether the Earth is round, isn't there? It's almost on a par with that. The science that demonstrates that we are changing the climate and warming the planet by burning carbon and increasing greenhouse gas concentrations is as solid as the science in any area today. And there is an overwhelming consensus among the world's scientists that climate change is real. It's caused by human activity. It's already causing problems for us. It will cause a lot more problems if we don't do something about that. So it's a bit distressing to hear, you know, the president-elect of our country mouthing something as ignorant, frankly, as that.
Did you think he would go this far to nominate, reportedly, the CEO of ExxonMobil, Rex Tillerson, to become the next Secretary of State?
Well, you know, it seems like every day there's a new development that just sort of sets a new standard. Just when we thought that things couldn't get any more bizarre and any more worrying, and you've listed the litany of appointments that he's made that point very clearly to a policy agenda of not only inaction on climate change, but to potentially defund the science that tells us what's happening and what we need to do. So it's gotten to the point where I'm almost not surprised by anything, but this is the most worrying development of all. And we know, for example, that Tillerson also has very close ties with Russia and Russian fossil fuel interests. And so that's a little distressing.
Tom Tolles, how are you making sense of this? What was your reaction when you heard that Rex Tillerson might be the next Secretary of State?
Well, let me just take issue with the premise of your question. There is no way to make sense of this. My business is satire and trying to shed some light on news events with satire. But honestly, this is the first time in my career, which has been going on some time now, that I've seen the actual events that I'm seeing getting beyond satire. I think we've gone through the looking glass. Now we are in an era of politics, the likes of which we have never seen. I don't think anybody has any idea that we have the degree of it's a change of kind now. It's not just a degree of left to right spectrum. We are in a different era. The agenda, the nature of the way government will work, the nature of government's relation to the truth, all these things are changing in ways that we've not seen before, and it is extremely worrisome and extremely dangerous, in my opinion.
The one big question that I've been thinking about is how difficult or easy will it be for this administration to undo the progress that has been made, even national park monuments. I mean, can you talk about that? Because I haven't seen a really good article that's really gone into this and has answered this question thoroughly.
Yeah, as Tom said, we're in uncharted territory, so we don't know. In the past, it's been very difficult for an incoming administration to demand, dismantle all of the infrastructure at the various agencies, and that's important because there needs to be continuity. We can't completely change our policy approach every 4 years or every 8 years, and so in the past that hasn't happened. Administrations that were adversarial to, for example, acting on climate or other environmental issues, in general, haven't swung as far to the extreme as this incoming administration appears to have. Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Richard Nixon. Under these administrations, there were EPA administrators who were actually active on the environment, who did what they were supposed to do and defended the environment rather than allow, polluting interests to run the show. So this, again, we're in uncharted territory. One thing that does give me solace is the fact that, we no longer run the show. We are an important nation. We are one of the most powerful nations. But the rest of the world has decided that they're going to act on climate change, whether or not the U.S. is with them. China clearly is going to act, is going to move forward. And what we have to decide as a country, are we going to be an international outlaw? Are we going to be the skunk at the garden party when it comes to the issue of climate change, perhaps the greatest issue, the greatest threat that we face as a civilization?
I've also been thinking about the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. And over the years, we have had climate scientists, climate advocates on the show who have said, we don't need new laws. We have really good laws in place. The problem is they're not being enforced. And that happened even under the Obama administration. So obviously we don't know yet, but what are your thoughts about enforcement of these laws that are already on the books?
Yeah, so, it's enforcement is the responsibility of institutions like the EPA. And when you have the veritable fox guarding the hen house, as we may now have in the EPA, it's easy to imagine that there will be no enforcement. So it is still the law of the land. The Clean Power Plan that President Obama passed in his second term does mandate that under the Clean Air Act power companies, coal companies, power generating industries need to limit their carbon emissions. So that is the law of the land. The question is, will the incoming administration be willing to enforce those laws? We have to actually go back to George W. Bush's first term when Christine Todd Whitman was the EPA administrator. And under her leadership, CO2 was declared a pollutant. And from that point on, there was a precedent for CO2 to be regulated under the Clean Air Act. Of course, we know what happened. Christine Todd Whitman got pushed out. Dick Cheney's team came in, and there was a very abrupt change in direction by the administration on climate. What we have now is potentially even worse.
And I just want to remind everyone, because things are moving so quickly, these appointees are coming up every day. So last week, Donald Trump picked Scott Pruitt to head the Environmental Protection Agency. He's a climate denier, an oil industry defender, Oklahoma attorney general who is suing the EPA on climate change. So if he is confirmed, the head of the EPA will have a past record of actually fighting the EPA. Tom, as a cartoonist, who your cartoons in the book are amazing, and when we had Michael Mann on, he said the goal of this project was to kind of explain these big issues in a way that a lot of people can understand them. How are you planning to tackle this in your cartoons?
Well, let me just – I'll give you a negative interpretation and a possible positive one. I mean, it's people have said before that personnel is policy. And so every indication is that the policy – I mean, Donald Trump has gone out of his way to find possibly the worst roster of people to populate his administration. And he's already indicated directly and indirectly that he's not going to be, like, doing everything himself. He's going to be relying on his people, which, of course, any president does. So this is – their agenda is well known. And The only positive thing that you can draw from this, and I'll use the word draw because that's what I do, and I will give you a visual imagery that is the only positive thing, is that despite their denial, despite their intentions, despite the terrible policy and politics of this. I mean, the subtitle of our book says how climate is destroying our politics. Well, I think mission accomplished in that department. But the one thing that they can't do, no matter what their intention is to change the reality. And they want to implement the fossil fuels traditional agenda of continuing to greenlight fossil fuel burning, and which is destroying our climate. But the fact of the matter is, no matter what they say, the climate is still being destroyed. More and more people, both outside the United States and inside the United States, through the non-fossil fuel, and even within, to a certain degree, the fossil fuel corporate structure, recognize this. And I said I would give you a visual image. We are now in a situation that essentially is, everybody's always talking about, well, what happens if someday an asteroid comes and hits the Earth? This is exactly the same thing. We can see the asteroid in the sky now. More and more people can see it getting larger and larger and approaching the Earth. So you can have all the people in the world you want in government saying, no, there's no asteroid there. But the evidence is now so clear, people are starting to see it. And despite their best intentions, the reality of the situation will continue to encroach on them. So they may try or wish they could roll all this back and make it all go away. It's the real thing. It's coming. And reality sometimes has a way of overpowering politics. And eventually it will. And we have a choice now whether we either face reality, work with reality, try to deflect the asteroid, or sit here and play games and let it hit us. And that's the choice we're faced with right now.
Let me continue the analogy, because, in fact, a member of Donald Trump's transition team has said that they want to basically dissolve the Earth Science Mission at NASA.
Right.
So we're literally talking about the very same institution that is monitoring that asteroid as it approaches us, both figuratively and literally, they are indeed trying to make it difficult to even continue the monitoring of this problem, because presumably they find what that monitoring is indicating to be inconvenient.
And I just want to jump in here, because this is not just what Michael just said, the undermining of data and honest reporting makes what is already a catastrophically dangerous situation worse by a factor of 10 at least, because a democracy cannot operate with fake facts. Fake facts are now being mainstreamed from all different directions, and now they're coming right out of the administration of the United States itself. This is unprecedented to this degree, this callousness, this the level of brazenness, and the level of not even caring. This tells us that we have a different situation on our hands, and every person in the United States has to stand up now and for the honest facts, not just in climate, but in every other area. This is a genuine threat. It's a threat to the climate, and it's a threat to the way we understand the truth here. This is fundamental to the democratic process. Fundamental. There's no way around it.
Tom Tolles is a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for The Washington Post. He drew the cartoons in the incredible book that was written by Michael Mann, The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. You can see one of his cartoons at yourcallradio.org. Michael Mann is professor of atmospheric science at Penn State and director of the Penn State Earth System Science Center. And Michael and Tom will be speaking at the Commonwealth Club today at noon, 555 Post Street. That's downtown. There are tickets still available. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. And Michael is in town for the American Geophysical Union's conference. And tomorrow at noon, there's going to be a rally to stop the attack on science. It's at Jesse Square, 740 Mission Street, and we'll also put a link to that at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. There's a lot to keep up with. Over the weekend, we got reports that Donald Trump has tapped Rex Tillerson, the oil baron who runs ExxonMobil, to be the next Secretary of State. Scott Pruitt, the Oklahoma Attorney General who's suing the EPA on climate change, has been tapped to lead the EPA. Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, a Republican from Washington State, is the likely choice for the Secretary of Interior. She opposes federal ownership of public lands, voted to make it more difficult for the president to create national monuments. So what are your thoughts on all of this? What questions do you have for Tom and Michael? And what about a response? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Tweet us, leave a comment on our website. Usually we tend to end the show with solutions, but these days I think I'm going to try to talk about them closer to the beginning. What is the response? Okay, let's talk about different factions. How are scientists going to respond to this? Yeah. What are you talking about with your colleagues?
Yeah. Let me mention, by the way, Tom actually did also contribute to the writing of The Madhouse Effect.
Okay, so, thank you.
In a very important way. Well, you know, we are, you know, here we're gathered at this conference. This is the first time many of us have seen each other, of course, since the election. Many of my scientist colleagues and I have had a chance to talk in person. And, you know, as you might imagine, we are worried. To some extent, we are horrified at what's unfolding. And we felt that there needed to be some vehicle to express that. And, you know, it's not typical for scientists to be expressive in that way. We're taught to sort of keep our feelings and to some extent our opinions to ourselves and just, you know, let the facts speak. And it's a little bit outside of the comfort zone of a scientist to get out there, you know, at a rally and to speak and to demonstrate. But we are, again, as I said, in uncharted waters. The scientific community did see a similarly dark episode during the McCarthy era, and there were leading scientists who got caught up in the McCarthy witch hunt. This is, I think, the worst atmosphere that we have faced since then. And just as it was important for scientists to speak out then, and many of them did, it's important for scientists to speak out. And what we mean by speak out is not to, you know, try to prescribe what the policy, solutions to climate change should be. We're happy for policymakers to debate that. But to make sure that science plays its rightful role in informing that discussion, and there's a real fear that in this incoming administration, that will simply not be the case. Facts no longer seem to speak for themselves, and that means scientists have to be out there defending a fact-driven way of looking at the world.
Tom, before we talk about cartoonists, you work for The Washington Post, and so I wonder what your thoughts are about the media. I watched all of the Sunday shows this weekend, and I just didn't hear a sense of urgency in any voice. I didn't hear anyone come out and state the facts that Big Oil, if these people are confirmed, are going to run a section of the U.S. government. What are your thoughts about media coverage of all of this?
Well, my feeling is that, I mean, one of the reasons I have become so, over the years, so intensely interested in the climate change issue as a cartoonist is specifically because the media has not covered the subject well from the beginning. It's a little bit of a tricky subject in that its ramifications in terms of policy are ask for sacrifice now for benefit later. Initially, the science wasn't quite as black and white as it is now, and the public interest in it has not been immediately keen, because unlike a polluted river or brown skies, it's not an immediate impact. That all having been said, it was clearly an immense problem building, and somebody had to start talking about it. So that's why I've been doing so many cartoons on it. I think the response of the media to the Trump election so far has been, generally speaking, shocking and disappointing, in that they are normalizing him as a regular president. The mood that you see on shows covering this is lighthearted, just kind of socially interested, and telling jokes and, you know, asking, you know, inside questions and, you know, little details here and there. They're just completely missing the reality of what this administration represents and the potential danger. And it's now beyond just potential. The people that have already been appointed so clearly signal danger to the climate, to the political system, that the idea that you can cover this administration the way past presidents have been covered, it's the same way as saying, oh, well, you can cover the McCarthy era as just another interesting, colorful figure. No, there are actually threats to democracy from time to time. We are in one now. Sense of urgency is insufficient. And we just like climate, you can deal with a thing early and easily, or at least early and more easily, or you can wait and suffer some pretty profound consequences. And that's what we're looking at right now.
Well, let me try to inject just ever so slight a bit of cautious optimism into the picture. Because we have seen something interesting emerge over the past few days. Many of those moderate Republicans, the Lindsey Grahams and the John McCains of the world, are starting to reassert themselves. And they seem to be signaling that they're not going to permit handing over our government to bad actors in the way that, in the direction that we seem to be going right now. Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, said he absolutely would not confirm Rex Tillerson. There is...
Oh, wasn't that John Bolton? He said he definitely... He said he would definitely vote against John Bolton and look into Rex Tillerson.
Maybe I'm overstating it. He did absolutely, in the statement that I read, express discomfort with Rex Tillerson. And so, you know, we've seen this before when Republicans have sort of overstepped as when they've gained too much power. And we saw that a decade ago when Republicans gained full control of our government. And I remember that all too well because I was the subject of a congressional investigation by Joe Barton of Texas, one of the leading recipients of fossil fuel money in the U.S. House of Representatives. And Republicans at the time, and he wanted to subpoena all of my emails, and because of this iconic graph that we published a decade and a half ago, the hockey stick curve, the climate change deniers, fossil fuel industry funded critics have wanted to discredit this graph for years because it is a powerful, you know, indicator of how profound an impact we're having on the climate.
And the graph looks like a hockey stick.
It does. You don't need to understand all the complex science of climate change to understand what that graph is telling us. That abrupt, you know, rise of the past century is without precedent. It means that we are having a profound impact on the climate. And for that, I was under attack by politicians who are in the pay of fossil fuel interests like Joe Barton. And at the time, as I said, Republicans had full control of our government. There was really nothing to stop, it would seem, Joe Barton from pursuing and continuing with this witch hunt, except for the fact that several prominent Republicans did come out and they said, no, that's too far. We're not going to allow you to target and intimidate scientists just because you don't like their findings. Sherwood Bollert, who is the chair of the House Science Committee, Republican, upstate New York, old school, pro-environment, pro-science Republican, wrote an extremely caustic op-ed blasting his fellow Republican Joe Barton for this witch hunt. John McCain was one of the Republicans who came out and said, no, this is not all right, Joe Barton. So it did happen in the past. Maybe we're starting to see the initial stages of that pushback from within the mainstream of that party, the Republican Party.
Well, so on ABC's This Week over the weekend, Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky, said that he will block John Bolton as the number two in the State Department and said he will, quote, reserve judgment on Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil. Now, in order to block these people, you need every Democrat and three Republicans to vote no. And so that's what it's going to take once these hearings come up. Today we are joined by Michael Mann, professor of atmospheric science at Penn State, and Tom Tolles, a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for The Washington Post. They are co-authors of the book The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. And they're going to be speaking today at noon at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, 555 Post Street. There are tickets available. Check yourcallradio.org for more information. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at Your Call Radio. Thank you to Stefan of San Francisco, Cheryl of Oakland, and Jack and Keith of San Francisco for being supporters of KLW and keeping the public in local public radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about how we can protect Medicare from privatization. Donald Trump campaigned to protect Medicare, but House Speaker Paul Ryan wants to convert the program into a voucher system, which is supported by Tom Price, Donald Trump's nominee for Health and Human Services Secretary. Democrats say they will stand firm and unify against Ryan's plan. How are grassroots organizations responding? That's tomorrow. On Wednesday, we'll talk about the importance of buying local. There's a new report out about how Amazon is affecting mom-and-pop shops. And then on Thursday, scientist and professor Naomi Oreskes will be joining us. She is also in town for this event that is taking place in San Francisco with a number of scientists. She wrote the book Merchants of Doubt, so I hope you can tune in for that. Today we are joined by Michael Mann, professor of atmospheric science at Penn State, Tom Tolles, a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for The Washington Post. They are co-authors of the book The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. And you can see Tom and Michael today at the Commonwealth Club at noon, 555 Post Street here in San Francisco, downtown. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Grace in Oakland. Hi, Grace. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I'm calling because I would love to hear comment on Lamar Smith and his recent retweet of that false climate science article that was in Breitbart. I'm seeing a lot of leadership in the House on key committees. He was affirmed the day before, and I worry. I mean, there are moderate Republicans, but they may not have key posts in the administration and in the House.
All right. Thank you. Michael Mann, do you know about this tweet that Lamar Smith retweeted from Breitbart?
Yes, I do. And there's a history here. Lamar Smith has been engaging for more than a year or two now in what I called an assault on climate science in an op-ed that I wrote in the New York Times last year. He has tried to defund climate science in NASA and NOAA, the NSF, the National Science Foundation, wanted to replace peer review, the scientific peer review process, with a congressional oversight on what grants get funded, what scientific grants get funded. He has actually targeted multiple climate scientists with subpoenas, again, to try to get a hold of emails or documents that he might be able to use to try to embarrass them or discredit them because of the findings of their work and how it threatens the very same vested interests that fund him, the fossil fuel interests that fund him. Lamar Smith is the chair of the House Science Committee, and yet I have argued that under his, I would say, lack of leadership or his negative leadership, it should be termed the House Anti-Science Committee because what they stand for goes completely against science. He doesn't accept the mainstream scientific understanding of climate change. There's several Republicans on that committee who don't accept the science of evolution, sort of equal opportunity science denial by the highest scientific authority within our Congress, the House Science Committee. So Lamar Smith sort of took it to a new level, right, because not only has he engaged in those actions that I described, but he is now proactively promoting fake news, literally fake news about climate science, a Breitbart article that let's understand the context. 2016 is going to go down as the warmest year on record. There's no question about that now. Enough of the data have come in. It doesn't even matter what happens in December now. This will be the warmest year the planet has ever seen. And what they're essentially trying to do, and the article he referred to and he was tweeting, is people are saying, basically, it was so warm now, right, that inevitably temperatures are starting to come down a little bit from this massive peak, and they're saying, look, the globe is cooling. It's sort of like having one cold day in spring and saying, look, summer's not going to come this year. It's about as scientifically defensible as that. And that's coming from the House Science Committee, the chair of the House Science Committee.
I'd just like to add that we're discussing whether the Republicans in government can be the firewall to some of these things. As it stands now, that is maybe our only hope, but I would say it's a rather thin one. I did a cartoon for tomorrow's Washington Post, which is actually already online at the Washington Post website and linked to on my Facebook page if anybody wants to see it, that suggests that the Republican Party has been in the habit and business of not taking the kind of leadership that they need to on a lot of issues. That the rather direct implication in the cartoon is that the main issue that the Republican Party has been concerning itself with is tax cuts for the rich. That has not changed. That's about the only thing that is not changing under President Trump. I think, you know, if there are any Republicans still in office that would like to be heroes, this is a heck of a good time for them to find that in themselves, because the country desperately needs it. If they don't, it falls to the next layer, which is citizen action. And there's a lot of things citizens can do, but they're going to have to do a lot more than we've been in the habit of doing also in that area.
I'm looking at your cartoon. When you sit down to do these cartoons, what's that process like? I mean, they just say so much.
Well, it's a matter of bad brain wiring. People say, how do you do that? I think it's just a matter of having a brain that makes connections where normal brains don't. I sit down, look at the news, see what's happening, see what's outrageous, which lately there's a lot of. Try to put it into a historical context of what the current news means, and then try to find an interesting, engaging, vivid, and telling way to portray that, hopefully with a little bit of humor and a little bit of ire as well.
What sort of response do you get from your fans at the Washington Post, and how has the conversation changed since the election?
Well, what hasn't changed is, I think, the main story there. Because of the internet, now you can hear a lot more from a lot more readers directly, immediately. And what I've noticed is that it's certainly not an original observation with me, but it's telling and interesting the way the understanding of common understanding of factual matter has split so dramatically. I mean, you get a situation where Donald Trump's saying that he has an open mind on climate, which already is not a respectable position. There's no reason to have an open mind on this subject. The facts are what they are. But a lot of Republican conservative readers are operating off an entirely different script of facts. I keep hearing that not only is climate science in doubt or not yet proven, readers have gotten to the point now where they are saying there's no truth to it whatsoever, no evidence, and any evidence that's cited is fabricated completely, start to finish. Now, you cannot have a conversation with someone who doesn't accept even like the basics of the scientific process. That's alarming. I don't know what the answer to that is, other than people who actually still care about the truth can understand what science is, how it works, what it does, and can look at a set of facts and how to analyze them. Every citizen that regards that as important has now got to become engaged in the process one way or another, yeah, through other organizations, through what they write, through what they read, through how they talk to people. This is a time where citizens, the ball is falling into the citizens' hands, and everybody's got to get engaged.
To that point, we have a comment on Facebook from Shiva, who says, I'm overwhelmed by the number of calls and donations and actions that I'm being asked to take by various organizations. What is the most effective thing to do right now if one can dedicate a bit of time each day? Michael?
It's a great question. I think Tom just sort of gave us the answer to that question in a sense. It's becoming engaged. Giving money to environmental organizations, helps them do their work. And there are a lot of good environmental organizations that are out there trying to affect change and move us forward. You can buy compact fluorescent light bulbs and bicycle to work and do all those things in your ordinary daily lives that make you healthier and happier and save you money, and they're helping us, at least put a dent in this problem. But ultimately, to solve a problem of this magnitude, we are going to need policy action at the highest level. It's already happening internationally. The question is whether the U.S. is now going to throw a monkey wrench into the works, given the position that Donald Trump has expressed on pulling out of the Paris Treaty, for example. Now more than ever, it's important that people make their voices heard, so that there isn't room for politicians to back out of commitments that are in place to help us try to preserve this planet for future generations.
I'd like to say that I mean, there are a lot of great organizations. I think it's important to just pick one. If you pick the wrong one, it doesn't matter. If you get engaged, make a little donation, start following what they're doing, supporting what they're doing. If it turns out not to be the one that you feel is the best, you will learn just by getting engaged. You start to learn what you feel is the best avenue for your efforts. The main thing is to find a path that you are comfortable getting on and doing something. The difference between doing something and doing nothing is remarkably complete. Doing nothing serves no one. Doing something, even if it's the wrong thing at first or not quite exactly the right thing, you will learn in the process of being engaged. Your energies and interest and dedication will sharpen the same way when if you practice a musical instrument, you get better. Getting engaged, you just get better at it, and everybody benefits.
Yeah, if I were going to put my thumb on the scale in that discussion, there are a couple environmental organizations that I've worked closely with and I think are doing amazing work, the Union of Concerned Scientists and also the Sierra Club, which, you know, has such meaning here in California. We used to think of the Sierra Club as being about, you know, preserving, you know, the redwoods. And now they, like a lot of environmental organizations, recognize that regardless of what you care about, whether it's our forests, whether it's polar bears, it doesn't matter. Whether it's birds, and the Audubon Society has weighed in the same way. In all of these cases, the greatest threat that is now posed is the threat of climate change, and they've weighed in, and they're all doing really good work. And those are a few, I guess, rather than one. Those are a few that I find have done really good work recently.
Well, thank you for that question, Shiva. I think we're going to be asking that one almost every day from here on out. Michael Mann is professor of atmospheric science at Penn State. Tom Tolles is a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for The Washington Post. They are co-authors of The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. And they'll be speaking today at the Commonwealth Club at noon, downtown San Francisco, 555 Post Street. There are still tickets available. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And Michael is in town for the American Geophysical Union's conference. Tomorrow, there is going to be a rally to stop the attack on science at noon, Jesse Square, 740 Mission Street. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. And let's go to our next caller, Roger in San Francisco. Hi, Roger.
Yes. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I totally agree with your guess, but I think I have a sense of the American public, and I don't think they'll react until they actually see physical evidence of what of rising tides taking over places like Florida, here in San Francisco. What they do is cherry-pick their information. They pick news sources that coincide with their own philosophy. And no matter how you try to approach them, you really can't reach them because their sense of facts is totally different than your legitimate sense of facts. The scientists are right. Our planet is heating up. Our coastlines are going to be inundated within 50 years. It's going to cost billions of dollars, if not trillions, to repair this country from this tragedy heading our way. But maybe I'm too pessimistic, but with the election of Donald Trump, I've lost confidence in this country and the electorate.
Thank you, Roger.
Well,
Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. I mean, I don't think there's anything in what you said that I disagree with. I thought you sort of stated the challenge very appropriately. I'm a little bit more optimistic for some of the reasons we've talked about. Internationally, we are seeing a lot of progress. The numbers have just come in, by the way, for this last year. Be the third year in a row where carbon emissions globally did not go up, even as the global economy continued to increase. Now, that's not enough. We've got to bring those emissions down fairly substantially. And, you know, the Paris Agreement was an important step towards doing that. But we're starting to see the ship turn the corner, and we need to turn the corner even faster. You're absolutely right that, you know, there's what I called the Cuyahoga River moment in the environmental debate of the 1970s, when the Cuyahoga River in Ohio caught fire. That sort of woke up the populace to the fact that we've got a problem. It was a single event that sort of galvanized attention and action. Arguably, we've had many of those events in the case of climate change, storms like Superstorm Sandy or Katrina that were made worse by climate change. Matthew was made more flooding with these storms. We know it's related to the warmer oceans, the greater moisture in the atmosphere. That means you get more rainfall from these storms. The wildfires that we've seen out west, a tripling of the extent of wildfires in just a matter of decades. So there are enough events, massive fires, flooding events that we can point to and say, well, you know, here it is. This is climate change. Climate change is making these events worse. It's not necessarily causing these individual weather events, but it's making them worse. It's making their impacts worse. Why is it that we're not seeing the same tipping point in the consciousness that we saw back in the 1970s with the Cuyahoga River catching on fire? I don't think it's because we haven't had the teaching moments. I think it's exactly what the caller alludes to, Roger alludes to. We now live in a very different media environment where people, to quote former Senator Patrick Moynihan of New York, you know, who once famously said, "You're entitled to your own opinions, but not your own facts." Well, people now feel that they are entitled to their own facts when it comes to issues like climate change. We live in this often this fact-free environment where, you know, we have a party that right now is led by individuals who reject the overwhelming scientific consensus on climate change. That makes it very difficult to have the important, nuanced, and good faith discussions and debates about how to act on the problem. We've got to somehow get past this fake debate that we're stuck in about whether climate change exists and on to the worthy, because there is a worthy debate to be had about what we do about this problem. Let's get on to that discussion.
And I'd just like to say, I mean, I the political use of misinformation has just gotten a lot more sophisticated. The example of how the tobacco industry deliberately contaminated the public understanding of the facts has been used as a model pretty directly and almost perfectly step for step with climate change. And it's not just that people don't understand there is essentially an organized, deliberate propaganda apparatus that has been at work, vigorously at work, not shyly and not haphazardly, but deliberately at work to sow misunderstanding on this topic. And the people who have been swept up in this or inclined to follow that kind of misinformation, they're the hard cases, and trying to turn them around is the long road. The shorter road is everybody who does understand what is going on needs to participate.
What's really disturbing, and we'll talk more about this on Thursday with Naomi Oreskes, who...
good friend of mine.
good friend of yours, who wrote about these front groups and the merchants of doubt. Are lobbyists needed now? Are these front groups needed now if we potentially have the CEO of ExxonMobil as the Secretary of State? I mean, what...
It seems like the reins of power have literally been now turned over to these special interests, to the front groups, to the Koch brothers, who actually there are ties with just about all of these nominees in EPA, DOE, to Koch brothers funded front groups, dark money funded groups. So they're no longer operating in the shadows. They are now literally taking the reins of our government if these nominees are confirmed. Let me just issue that caveat. Mm. If these nominees are confirmed.
I just want to add that despite the fact that the climate-denying forces have, in the last couple months, made huge strides in taking direct power, you have to remember that the goal of that movement was never going to be to make the science go away. They just wanted to delay action. And each year, the public understanding domestically and globally has gotten more on board. The numbers of people who understand this and the political climate has been getting better and better and better. It's just that we've taken this one catastrophically bad step backwards. And in terms of the levers of power, things could not be worse now. In terms of genuine public understanding, things have never been better. As the public can keep that momentum going, and the reality of the facts is not going to change, and that reality is the wind in the sails of people who want to get this thing right, and we will get it right. It's just a question now of whether we get it right soon enough.
Amen.
I was just thinking about Standing Rock. And the power of mass movements.
That's right.
I mean, we're talking about a group of people taking on a massive corporation. And they had a victory. We're not sure what's going to happen. But the President Obama and the Army Corps denying the easement under the Missouri River was definitely a victory.
Well, it almost reminded me of Tiananmen Square in a way, if your listeners remember that event. Seemingly in the face of just massive power a small group of committed people motivated by concern for their country or, in this case, for the environment, standing up to what would seem like overwhelming force that was being brought to bear to basically, to stop this movement.
Michael Mann is professor of atmospheric science at Penn State. Tom Tolles is a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for The Washington Post. They are co-authors of The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. If you're free at noon today, you can see Michael and Tom at the Commonwealth Club. They're speaking downtown San Francisco, 555 Post Street. There are tickets available. Check yourcallradio.org for more information. Michael and Tom, thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, how do we protect Medicare from privatization? During the election, Donald Trump campaigned on protecting Medicare, but House Speaker Paul Ryan wants to convert the program into a voucher system, and that is supported by Tom Price, Trump's nominee for Health and Human Services Secretary. Democrats say they'll stand firmly and unified against this plan. So how are grassroots organizations responding? What will it take to save Medicare? Join us live at 10 a.m. with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Helena Murphy is our intern and researcher. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.